Revolutionary War on Wednesday. Chapter 1, Wednesday.
"Wake up, Jack,"
Annie whispered. Jack opened his eyes. He looked at his clock. It was 6 a.m.
"Come on,"
Annie whispered. She was standing at his bedroom door, already dressed.
"Now?"
said Jack.
"Yeah, it's Wednesday. We have to go to the treehouse," she said.
"Oh, man, Wednesday," said Jack. Suddenly, he was wide awake.
"We have to help save Camelot," said Annie.
I know, said Jack, scrambling out of bed.
"Meet you out front," said Annie.
Jack quickly changed into his jeans and t-shirt. He threw his notebook and pencil into his backpack. Then he slipped down the stairs and out the front door. Annie was waiting in the gray early light.
"All set?"
she whispered.
"Yep," said Jack.
They took off running across their yard. They ran down their quiet street and into the Frog Creek woods. Soon they came to the treehouse. They climbed up the rope ladder. In the early light, they saw Morgan's note, the same note they'd found on Sunday. Jack picked it up and read aloud.
"Dear Jack and Annie, Camelot is in trouble. To save the kingdom, please find these four special kinds of writing for my library. Something to follow, something to send, something to learn, something to lend. Thank you, Morgan."
Annie picked up a piece of paper lying on the floor. It was a list of rules from the famous nurse, Clara Barton. They had met her on their journey to the Civil War.
"On Sunday, we found the first special writing," said Annie. "Something to follow."
"Yeah," said Jack. "And now we need to find the second thing, something to send."
He picked up a book lying near the note. The cover showed soldiers on a snowy riverbank. The title was The Revolutionary War. Jack frowned.
"Uh-oh," said Annie. "Another war," said Jack, sighing.
"You still want to go?" said Annie.
"We have to," said Jack.
He hated the suffering he'd seen in the Civil War. But they had no choice. They had to help Morgan and save Camelot. He pointed at the cover of the book.
"I wish we could go there," Jack said.
The wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 2, Day or Night. Jack shivered. The wind blew hard.
"It's cold," he said. He could see his breath in the air.
"Wrap your scarf tighter," said Annie.
Jack looked down. He had a wool scarf around his neck. He was also wearing woolen pants that buttoned at the knees, a coat, and a hat with three corners. On his feet were funny-looking shoes with buckles. In place of his backpack was a leather bag. Annie was wearing a long coat over a long dress. Jack pulled his scarf tighter. Then he looked out the window with Annie. They'd landed in trees near an icy river. The sky was gray and heavy with clouds.
"It's almost day, or almost night. I can't tell," said Annie.
"Yeah, I hope it's almost day," said Jack.
"I wonder where we'll find something to send," said Annie.
Jack shrugged.
"First we have to find the Revolutionary War," he said.
He opened their research book. By the gray light, he read, "Over 200 years ago, the United States was made up of 13 colonies ruled by Britain. From 1775 until 1782, American patriots fought for independence from Britain. This was called the Revolutionary War." Jack took out his notebook. He wrote, "American patriots fight for independence from Britain." Jack turned the page. There was a picture of soldiers in red uniforms. He read aloud, "During the Revolutionary War, British soldiers wore red uniforms. For this reason, they were called redcoats." Jack wrote in his notebook, "British equal redcoats."
"Wow, snow," said Annie.
Jack looked up from his writing. Annie was holding her hand out the window. A few snowflakes blew into the treehouse.
Not much yet, said Jack, but we better find the special writing soon.
Well, stop reading and come on, said Annie.
She buttoned up her coat and started down the ladder.
Okay, said Jack.
He packed the research book and his notebook into his bag. Then he followed Annie. When they stepped onto the ground, there were more snow flurries. The sky was growing darker.
I'm afraid it's almost night instead of day, said Jack.
Yeah,
said Annie, looking around.
Hey, look, people.
She pointed up the river. In the misty distance was a campfire. Several men sat around the fire. They all held muskets.
Maybe they can help us, said Annie.
She started away, but Jack grabbed her.
Wait, I think they're soldiers, he said. They have muskets. Remember the muskets from the Civil War? The guns that the soldiers carried?
Oh, yeah, said Annie.
They might be redcoats, said Jack. Let's sneak closer and get a better look at their uniforms.
Quick, said Annie, before it's too dark to see.
Chapter 3. It's time. Annie lifted up her long dress and ran to a tree close to the river. Jack held onto his hat and ran after her. They peeked out from behind the tree. More snow flurries swirled in the twilight.
Redcoats? Whispered Annie.
Can't tell, said Jack.
In the flickering firelight, the men didn't seem to be wearing uniforms at all. They wore ragged pants and coats. Some even had their feet wrapped in tattered cloth.
Come on, Annie said.
She ran to a tree closer to the river. Jack followed.
This is as close as we should get, he whispered.
But we still can't tell what they're wearing, said Annie.
She crept forward and hid behind a scraggly bush.
No closer, Jack whispered. But Annie took off again.
She crouched behind a rock. She was only about 10 feet from the campfire.
Oh, brother, she's way too close now, Jack thought.
But he took a deep breath and ran to the rock. When he joined Annie, she looked at him and grinned.
This is like hide-and-seek, she whispered.
It's not a game, Annie, Jack whispered back. It's war. Be serious.
I am serious, said Annie, her voice rising.
Shh, said Jack.
But it was too late. One of the men stood up and looked around.
What's the matter, Captain?
Another asked.
I heard something, said the captain.
He held up his musket.
Jack stopped breathing.
Who's there?
The captain shouted. Jack looked at Annie. She shrugged.
We're caught, she whispered.
Who's there?
The captain shouted again.
Just two kids,
Annie answered in a small voice.
Come out and show yourselves, the captain said.
Jack and Annie stood up from behind the rock. They both held up their hands.
We come in peace, said Annie.
In the shadowy twilight, the captain moved toward them.
Who are you?
He asked.
We're Jack and Annie, said Annie.
Why were you spying on us? He asked.
We weren't spying, said Jack. We just wanted to know if you were redcoats or patriots.
Which would you like us to be? The shadowy figure asked.
Patriots, said Jack.
We are patriots, the captain said.
Thank goodness, said Annie.
The captain smiled.
Where are you from? He asked.
His voice had softened.
We're visiting relatives nearby, Jack said.
Frog Creek, Pennsylvania, said Annie at the same time.
But that's amazing, the captain said. My farm is in Frog Creek. Where is your farm?
Jack didn't know how to answer.
It's near the Frog Creek woods, said Annie.
All farms are near woods, the man said with a laugh.
What? Just then someone called from up the river.
It's time, Captain.
The captain turned to the other men near the campfire.
It's time, he repeated.
The soldiers quickly put out their fire. They stood with their muskets on their shoulders.
Time for what, Captain? Annie asked.
Time to meet up with our commander-in-chief, he said. Return to your family now so your mother and father won't worry about you.
Yes, sir,
said Jack.
It is nice to see children, the captain said. I was just trying to write a letter to my own son and daughter. I didn't know what to say.
Tell them that you miss them, said Annie.
The man smiled. And I do, indeed, he said softly. Then he turned and headed up the river bank. His ragged men followed behind. Soon they all disappeared into the cold mist. Jack looked around. The wind was blowing harder. The snow was sticking to the ground.
What now? He asked.
More than anything, he wanted to go back home. With the soldiers gone, the river bank felt lonely and scary.
We still have to find something to send, said Annie.
I know, said Jack.
Maybe we should just follow the captain and his men, said Annie. They might lead us to something.
Jack wasn't sure that was a good idea, but he didn't have a better one.
Okay, but let's try not to get caught this time, he said.
He and Annie took off through the frozen twilight, following the snowy footprints of the American patriots. Chapter 4. Commander-in-Chief. Jack and Annie ran along the river bank. The wind whooshed over the cold water. Wet snowflakes hissed in the dark. But then Jack heard other sounds. He heard voices, lots of voices. He and Annie soon came upon hundreds and hundreds of soldiers gathered near the dark river. Many carried oil lanterns. The lanterns gave an eerie glow to the snowy twilight.
The captain and his men must be here somewhere, said Jack, looking around.
Boats like giant canoes were tied near the river. Men were leading horses and loading cannons onto the boats.
What are they all doing? Said Annie.
Jack pulled out their Revolutionary War book. He read in a whisper.
On Wednesday, December 25th, 1776. December 25th? That's Christmas, said Annie. Today's Christmas.
Cool, said Jack. He started reading again.
On Wednesday, December 25th, 1776, the Patriots were losing the war. Ragged and weary, many were ready to give up. Then something began to happen that would turn the war around. About 2,400 American Patriots gathered on the west bank of the Delaware River in Pennsylvania. They prepared to cross the river to go on a secret mission.
A secret mission? Oh, man,
said Jack. He started to pull out his notebook.
Attention, troops, the commander-in-chief,
a soldier shouted. Jack and Annie saw a man in a dark cape and a three-cornered hat ride up on a white horse. The commander-in-chief loomed above the crowd of soldiers. His cape flapped in the wind. He sat calmly and with dignity on the back of his horse. Even at a distance, Jack thought the commander-in-chief looked familiar, very familiar, but he couldn't figure out why.
A dangerous mission lies before you all, the man shouted above the wind. But I want you to have courage. You must remember the words of Thomas Paine.
The commander-in-chief held up a piece of paper. He read to his men.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman.
Wow, that's great, whispered Annie.
Listening to the powerful words, Jack felt his spirits rise too.
The harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph, the commander-in-chief read on. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value.
There was a silence, as if everyone were thinking about the words the man had read. Then the soldiers started cheering and clapping. They didn't seem tired at all anymore. Now they seemed eager to set out on their mission. The commander-in-chief saluted his men. He steered his horse toward the river. As the horse moved past them, Jack got a better look at the rider. He gasped.
Of course, he thought. He'd seen that face before, on dollar bills.
Jack grabbed Annie's arm. I know who the commander-in-chief is, he exclaimed. He's George Washington.
Chapter 5, The Letter.
George Washington? Really?
Said Annie.
Yeah, I think he is, said Jack.
Wow, where'd he go?
Said Annie.
I want to see him again. Come on.
She started toward the river.
Wait, don't go far, said Jack. I just want to make sure it's him.
He opened the Revolutionary War book. He found a picture of the boats on the riverbank. He read, When General George Washington gathered his troops by the Delaware River, he was commander-in-chief of the whole American army. The general led the army for 6 years until America became a free and independent nation. In 1789, he was elected the first president of the new United States.
Oh, man, it is him, said Jack.
He pulled out his notebook and wrote, General George Washington helped America become independent.
Hey, what are you writing? Someone asked.
Jack looked up. A bearded soldier was pointing at him. Jack shoved the Revolutionary War book and his notebook into his bag.
Nothing, sir, he said. He started walking away. The man shouted after Jack, but Jack ran down toward the river and lost himself in a crowd of soldiers.
When he looked over his shoulder, he was relieved. The bearded man was nowhere in sight.
Stop, young man!
Someone shone a lantern right in Jack's face. Jack gasped.
It was the captain.
I told you to go home, Jack, the captain said sternly. Where's your sister?
Jack looked around.
Where was Annie?
I don't know,
he said.
Find her at once and go back to your family, the captain ordered. Our secret mission is very important. Children will only get in the way.
Yes, sir, said Jack.
The captain started to leave, but he stopped.
I wonder if you could do me a favor, Jack, he asked.
Sure, said Jack.
The captain pulled out his letter.
This is my letter to my children, he said. It's a farewell letter. Would you please take it back with you to Frog Creek?
Yes, sir, said Jack.
You must only send it if you hear that we have failed in our mission and many patriots were lost, said the captain.
Yes, sir, said Jack.
The captain handed his letter to Jack.
I copied the general's speech for my children, the captain said. If anything bad happens to me, I hope those words will give them courage.
The captain then turned and disappeared into the crowd.
Good luck, Captain, Jack called.
He hoped he would never have to send the letter to the man's children. Suddenly, Jack clutched the letter to his chest.
Send, he whispered. This letter was the writing they'd been looking for. Something to send. He and Annie could go home now. Their mission was over.
Jack shoved the captain's letter into his bag. Now he just had to find Annie. As he looked around, he shivered.
Where is she? He muttered.
Jack started moving through the crowd, looking for Annie. It was hard to see. The wind was blowing harder. The snow fell faster. Jack started to panic.
Annie! He called.
As he wove quickly in and out of the crowd, he kept calling for her. None of the soldiers noticed him. They were all too busy. Finally, Jack came to the river. Through the lamp-lit mist, he saw soldiers waiting to get into the boats. Some had already climbed aboard.
Jack!
Came a cry.
Jack saw the figure of a small girl. She was sitting in the back of the biggest boat.
No way!
He whispered. Jack charged down to the boat. He stood at the edge of the water.
What are you doing?
Jack shouted.
This is George Washington's boat, Annie said. It's our big chance to spend time with him. We might not get another one.
Jack looked at the other end of the huge boat. Through the mist and falling snow, he saw the commander-in-chief talking to his crew.
We can't go with him, said Jack. We'll get in the way of his secret mission. Besides, we have something to send now.
What? How?
Said Annie.
A letter,
The captain gave me his letter to take back to Frog Creek, said Jack. We're only supposed to send it if something bad happens to the captain. We can go home now.
Oh, can't we go a little later?
Annie asked. Jack climbed into the boat to pull her out.
No, come on, he said, taking her hand.
Suddenly the crew moved to the back of the boat near Jack and Annie. The men grabbed their oars and started pushing the boat away from the shore.
We're taking off, said Annie.
No, we have to get out, Jack said to the rowers.
But the men were working too hard to pay attention. They were using their oars to hack up the ice at the edge of the river.
Excuse me, Jack said in a loud voice.
Just then the boat jolted forward. Jack nearly lost his balance. The boat broke through more ice. Rough waves sloshed against its sides.
We have to go back, said Jack.
Too late, said Annie.
They were headed across the Delaware River. Chapter 6. Crossing the Delaware. The huge boat rocked in the water. Giant chunks of ice smashed against its sides.
Thanks a lot, Annie, Jack whispered.
He shivered in the snowy cold.
We're not supposed to go on their secret mission with them.
It's okay, she whispered. Maybe we can help George Washington.
Are you nuts? Jack whispered. We should be on our way home now.
The boat hit a piece of ice. The boat bounced, then dipped into the river. Jack clung to the wooden side. He hoped they wouldn't turn over. Nobody could survive in this icy water, he thought. It would be like sinking on the Titanic. The crew fought hard to keep the boat moving forward. They rowed past chunks of ice into a smoother part of the river. Light from oil lamps shone on the water, making the ice chunks behind them glow like huge, glittering jewels. Jack looked back. Other boats were following them. They were filled with soldiers, horses, and cannons.
Where exactly are we going?
Annie whispered. Jack shrugged. He reached into his bag and pulled out their Revolutionary War book. By the dim lantern light in the boat, he searched through the book. He found a painting of General Washington crossing the Delaware River. He showed the painting to Annie. They each read the caption silently. After George Washington crossed the Delaware, he led his men on a 9-mile march to a British post. The post was filled with Hessians, German soldiers hired by the British to fight for them. The American patriots caught them off guard. The Hessians never thought the patriots would attack on a stormy Christmas night. It was a great victory for the patriots. They captured almost 1,000 Hessians. Hardly any of Washington's men were lost.
Yay! We won't have to send the captain's letter, Annie exclaimed.
Shh, said Jack.
But George Washington turned around and looked back at Jack and Annie.
Oh, no, Jack thought. Caught again.
He closed his eyes as if that would make him invisible.
He's coming, said Annie.
Jack looked up. George Washington was making his way back toward them. In the next moment, the commander-in-chief loomed above them like a giant shadow.
Children?
He asked in a quiet, angry voice.
Sorry,
Jack squeaked.
Merry Christmas, said Annie.
But George Washington did not say Merry Christmas back. Chapter 7. Spies.
What are you doing here? George Washington asked.
The commander-in-chief sounded furious.
We made a mistake, Jack said. We didn't mean to come.
George Washington turned to the rowers.
Who let these children sneak aboard?
He asked in a stern voice. The men looked at Jack and Annie with surprise.
It's not their fault, Annie said quickly. They were working too hard to notice us.
Just then the boat banged against the ice. The ice cracked. The boat moved on, then bumped against the shore. Two soldiers jumped out and pulled the boat up on the shore. George Washington looked at Jack and Annie.
This boat is returning to get more men,
he said. When it does, you two will get out and stay on the other shore.
Yes, sir, said Jack. He felt very embarrassed.
George Washington then gave orders to the rowers.
Make sure these children do not board any other boats when you return, he said.
The general stepped onto the riverbank. The wind started to pick up. The snow fell harder. As the crew unloaded the boat, neither Jack nor Annie spoke. Jack was miserable. They had caused trouble for George Washington, just when the general was trying to make America an independent nation. Jack desperately wished he and Annie had gone home earlier. They watched more and more boats land on the riverbank. As the soldiers unloaded their weapons and horses, a freezing rain began. Now rain, snow, and sleet fell together. Jack heard George Washington call to one of his men.
"This storm is getting worse, Major," the general said.
"Yes, sir,"
the major said.
"I think we're in for a blizzard," said Washington.
"Yes, sir. Our mission may be hopeless, sir," said the major. "Should we call it off?"
"No, you shouldn't," Jack whispered. "You're going to win."
"Should we turn back, sir?"
the major said.
"No, no," said Annie.
She stood up. The boat rocked.
"Don't turn back, George Washington, sir," she shouted. "You have to march on, sir. You have to attack the Hessians, sir."
"Shh," Jack tried to pull Annie back down. "We're not supposed to know about their secret mission."
"How does she know our plans, Major?" George Washington asked.
"Listen to us, sir," said Annie. "You're going to win."
She pulled away from Jack and jumped out of the boat.
"Annie!"
Jack leaped onto the riverbank. He scrambled after Annie up the steep, icy slope.
"You have to lead your men, General Washington, sir," Annie said. "The Hessians will be surprised. They think no army will be marching on a night like this."
"How do you know all this?" the major shouted above the storm. "How do you know what the Hessians are doing and thinking?"
I...
For once, Annie seemed at a loss for words.
"She just guessed," said Jack.
Just then, the bearded soldier who had yelled at Jack earlier stepped forward.
"I saw this boy earlier," he said. "He was writing things down."
"No, I was just..."
Now Jack was at a loss for words.
"Seize them," the major shouted. "They're spies."
Chapter 8. These Are the Times. Jack grabbed Annie's hand. "We're not spies," he said. He whirled around to face George Washington.
"General Washington, remember those words you said to your men?" Jack said. "You should believe them yourself, sir."
"What are you talking about?" George Washington asked.
Jack yanked the captain's letter from his bag. By the light of the lamp, he read the words the captain had copied for his children.
"These are the times that try men's souls," Jack read. "But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. The harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph."
Jack looked at George Washington.
"Even if things look impossible, you should keep going, sir," he said. "The harder things seem, the greater the triumph, right? That's what you read to your men. You have to keep going for their sake."
"Yes, and you have to keep going for our sake," said Annie. "For the sake of the future children of America, sir."
As the wet snow hissed about them, George Washington stared a long moment at Jack and Annie. Finally, he put a hand on each of their shoulders.
"I do not know who you are," he said. "I do not know how you know what you know, but I believe you. For your sake, and for the future children of America, we will march on."
"Yay!"
cried Annie.
"Yay!"
said Jack softly. He sighed with relief and put away the captain's letter.
"Now get back in the boat," said George Washington. "You must leave the fighting to us, to me and my men."
Jack felt very grateful to George Washington and his whole army. They were risking their lives for all of America's children, past and future. He could barely speak.
"Thank you, sir,"
said Annie.
Thank you both for telling me to listen to my own advice, said George Washington. He called to the rowers waiting in the boat. Take good care of these two.
George Washington climbed onto his horse. He looked down at Jack and Annie.
Merry Christmas, he said.
Then the commander-in-chief rode away into the stormy darkness. Chapter 9. Flash.
All aboard, one of the rowers called.
Jack and Annie hurried down the steep riverbank. They climbed back into the boat. The crew pushed away from the shore. The boat started back through the icy, churning waters of the Delaware River. Jack was freezing in the sleet and snow, but he didn't worry about that now. He was thinking instead about how they had helped George Washington. He was thinking about how they had helped keep history on its course. Jack felt great. When they got to the riverbank, Jack and Annie jumped out of the boat. Thanks, Jack yelled to the rowers. With the wind at their backs, Jack and Annie took off through the blizzard. They ran down the icy bank of the Delaware River. Thunder rumbled in the snowy sky. Lightning zigzagged over the woods.
How will we find the treehouse? Cried Annie.
I don't know, said Jack, but don't worry, we'll find it.
He felt very confident now, after meeting George Washington, after being thanked by George Washington. He and Annie ran on through the rain and the snow and the sleet. They ran along the riverbank until a bright flash of lightning lit up the sky. Then Jack saw it. The treehouse was directly to their left, high in a tall tree covered with snow.
Over there, he shouted.
Jack and Annie ran toward the edge of the woods. In the dark, Jack looked up, searching for the treehouse. Lightning lit the woods again. Jack saw the rope ladder flapping wildly in the wind. He grabbed it.
Annie, he called.
Here,
she said. Let's go, he said.
They climbed up the swaying ladder and scrambled into the treehouse. They were soaking wet and covered with slush and snow. Annie grabbed the Pennsylvania book.
I wish we could go there, she shouted.
The wind blew even harder. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 10. This Peaceful Place. Gray early light spilled into the treehouse. Birds sounded in the woods. The summer wind felt warm and gentle. Jack and Annie were wearing their nice dry clothes again.
Oh, man, said Jack. It's good to be home.
Yeah, said Annie, sighing. Back in this peaceful place.
Jack pulled the captain's letter out of his pack. He turned it over. It was addressed to Molly and Ben Sanders, Apple Tree Farm, Frog Creek, Pennsylvania.
Molly and Ben lived on a farm near these woods over 200 years ago, said Jack.
Annie gently touched the letter.
Your dad is going to make it home, kids. He misses you,
Annie whispered, as if she could send comforting words back through time. Jack carefully placed the special writing from the Revolutionary War next to the writing from the Civil War.
Look, said Annie.
She picked up a note lying in the corner. It said simply, Come back on Tuesday.
Another message from Morgan, said Annie.
Jack smiled. He pulled on his pack.
See you on Tuesday, treehouse, he said.
He started down the rope ladder. Annie followed. In the early daylight, they ran through the Frog Creek woods. Then they ran down their street. They climbed onto their porch and rested against the railing. They looked out at the dawn sky. Jack remembered the whoosh of the cold wind on the Delaware. He remembered the hiss of the wet snow and the slosh of the icy waves. He remembered George Washington reading to his men,
The harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph, Jack whispered.
Those words are true, said Annie. It was a hard conflict, and I feel kind of glorious right now, don't you?
Jack laughed.
Yeah,
Definitely,
he said. Then he and Annie slipped into their quiet, peaceful house.
Twister on Tuesday.
Chapter 1, Tuesday. Jack opened his eyes. Sunlight streamed through his window.
Tuesday,
he whispered. Morgan's note had told him and Annie to come back to the magic treehouse on Tuesday. He could hardly wait to find out where she was sending them today. Jack scrambled out of bed. He threw on his clothes. He packed his notebook and pencil into his backpack. Then he headed into the hall. Jack bumped into Annie. She was dressed in jeans and a t-shirt.
Tuesday,
they both whispered. Together they hurried down the stairs.
Mom, Dad, we're going out for a few minutes,
Jack shouted.
Don't you want breakfast first?
His dad called from the kitchen.
When we get back, said Annie.
They rushed out the front door. They ran down their street in the bright summer sunlight. A warm wind gently shook the trees as Jack and Annie headed into the Frog Creek woods. Soon they came to the tallest tree in the woods. The magic treehouse waited for them in the high branches. Jack and Annie grabbed the rope ladder and climbed up. Inside the shady treehouse, the note from Morgan was still on the floor. Dear Jack and Annie, Camelot is in trouble. To save the kingdom, please find these four special kinds of writing for my library. Something to follow, something to send, something to learn, something to lend. Thank you, Morgan.
Okay, said Jack. We have the first writing, something to follow.
He picked up a list from the Civil War.
And we have the second, said Annie. Something to send.
She picked up a letter from the Revolutionary War.
Now we need the third, said Jack, something to learn.
No problem, said Annie.
She grabbed a book lying in the corner.
I hope we're not going to another war.
Jack and Annie looked at the cover. It showed a field of tall green grass. The title was Life on the Prairie.
The prairie? Said Annie. We already went to the prairie the time we met Black Hawk.
Yeah, said Jack, remembering their adventure with a Native American boy.
He opened the book and turned to a picture of an old-fashioned train crossing the prairie.
Oh, he said, I get it. Trains crossed the prairie after the pioneers came. When we went to the prairie before, Native Americans were the only people who lived there.
So we must be going to pioneer time, said Annie.
I think so, said Jack.
He pointed at the picture that showed the train crossing the prairie.
I wish we could go there, he said.
The breeze picked up. The wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still.
Chapter 2, Signs of Life.
Jack opened his eyes. He was wearing pants with suspenders and a shirt with the sleeves rolled up. In place of his backpack was a leather bag. Annie was wearing a long dress and a sunbonnet.
I like my hat, she said. It'll keep the sun off my face.
Yeah, except the sun's not shining, said Jack.
He and Annie looked out the window. The sky was cloudy. The treehouse had landed in a small grove of trees near a creek. Beyond the trees was a wide open prairie. Green grass and wildflowers swayed in a chilly wind. In the distance, a train puffed across the prairie. Sparks of fire came out of its smokestack. Huge clouds of black smoke billowed into the gray sky.
Wow, said Jack.
He looked at the picture of the train in their book and read.
After the Civil War, the U.S. government built railroads to link the eastern and western parts of the country.
By the 1870s, steam engines carried people across the Kansas prairie. Jack pulled out his notebook and wrote, 1870s, trains across Kansas.
Let's get going, said Annie. We have to find that special riding for Morgan.
She started down the ladder. Jack packed his things in his leather bag and climbed down after her. When he stepped onto the ground, Jack looked toward the west. The train was gone. Only a thin trail of smoke floated across the sky.
That train was cool, said Jack.
Yeah, and so is that, said Annie.
She pointed in the other direction. Far away, in the distance, a line of covered wagons rolled through the rippling grass. Their white coverings billowed in the breeze. Jack pulled out the research book. He found a picture of the wagon train. He read aloud.
Wagons were the most common way for families to travel west. They could carry clothes, tools, food, and water. A line of wagons was called a wagon train. The white cloth coverings over the wagons also made them look like sailing ships or schooners. For this reason, covered wagons were sometimes called prairie schooners.
Jack looked at the wagons again. They did look like ships sailing across a rippling green sea. He wrote in his notebook, covered wagons equal prairie schooners.
Let's get a closer look, said Annie.
She took off across the grass. Jack put away his things and ran after her. As they ran, the wind began to blow harder. The clouds overhead grew darker.
Wait, wait, Jack finally called to Annie. We'll never catch up to it.
They both stopped running. Panting, they watched the wagon train vanish over the horizon. Jack took a deep breath.
What now? He said.
They looked around. All Jack could see was the distant grove of trees with the treehouse. With the train and wagon train gone, there were no signs of life anywhere. No pioneer cabins, no Native American teepees.
How can we find the special writing? Said Jack. There's nothing out here.
Oh, yeah? Said Annie. What's that?
She pointed to a rusty pipe sticking out from the top of a small hill. Streaming from the pipe was a column of black smoke.
Oh, man, said Jack. That's definitely a sign of life.
Chapter 3. One-Room Schoolhouse.
Let's check it out, said Annie.
She and Jack walked up the little hill. At the top, they saw that the rusty pipe was rising out of a wooden roof. They walked around to the other side of the hill. Beneath the wooden roof was a door. The door seemed to open into the hill itself.
What is this? Said Annie.
Let's find out, said Jack.
He studied their research book until he found a black and white photograph. The photograph showed the same hill with the door. Jack read aloud. Since the prairie did not have many trees, wood was hard to find, so pioneers often made their houses out of sod bricks, which were blocks of earth cut out of the prairie. Sometimes a sod house was dug out of the side of a hill. It was called a dugout. Jack pulled out his notebook. He wrote, sod bricks equal blocks of earth. Dugout equals sod house carved out of hillside. Then Jack read more to Annie. Tornadoes or twisters are common on the prairie, so many dugouts had storm cellars. A storm cellar was like a rough basement below the ground. During a twister, a storm cellar is the safest place to be.
Wow, maybe we'll see a twister, said Annie.
I hope not, said Jack.
Then he read on.
A pioneer family built this dugout for a home. When they moved, the dugout became a schoolhouse. The schoolhouse had only one room. It also had a storm cellar beneath it.
Jack quickly wrote, some dugouts have storm cellars.
Hey, this is the place, said Annie.
Jack looked up from his writing. What place? He asked.
Where's the best place to find our special writing? "Something to learn?" asked Annie.
Jack smiled. "A school," he said. Annie ran to the wooden door and knocked loudly. A moment later, the door creaked open. A girl peeked out. Her hair was in a tight bun, as if she were a grown-up, but she didn't look more than 16 or 17 years old.
"Hi, I'm Annie," said Annie. "This is my brother, Jack."
The girl opened the door wider.
"Hello, Jack and Annie," she said. "I'm your teacher, Miss Neely."
"You're the teacher?" said Jack. Miss Neely seemed way too young to be a teacher.
"Yes," she said, smiling. "Come in, you're late."
Chapter 4, Reading Lesson. It was warm and dry inside the schoolhouse. Several oil lamps lit the darkness.
"Class, meet Annie and Jack," the young teacher said.
"What class?" thought Jack.
There were only three kids. On one bench sat a small boy and a girl. The boy looked about Annie's age. The girl looked a little younger. On another bench sat a tall boy. He was tough-looking.
"Welcome to our first day of school," said the young teacher.
"Today's your very first day?" said Annie.
"Yes, and our first day in this dugout. The family who lived here left for California a week ago," said Miss Neely.
Jack and Annie peered around the room. The walls were made of dirt. The floor was made of wood. It was covered by a worn rug. Miss Neely's desk was made from a barrel. A small coal stove was near her desk. A crate held a water jug, chalk, and two small blackboards.
"It's a nice school," Annie said politely.
"Thank you. We're very grateful for it," said Miss Neely. "And where do you live?"
"Well, we actually..." Jack started, then he stopped. He wasn't sure what to say.
"Actually, we don't live around here," Annie said. "We're passing through."
"You must be from the wagon train I saw this morning," Miss Neely said.
Annie nodded. Jack smiled. "Good work, Annie," he thought. "We can only stay a little while," he said.
"How exciting for you," said Miss Neely.
"Heading west on a wagon train. Where are you going?"
"California," Annie said.
"California, that's wonderful, isn't it, class?" Miss Neely said to the others.
"Yes, ma'am," said the two younger children. The older boy barely nodded.
"Have you ever been to school before?" Miss Neely asked Annie.
"Yes, ma'am," Annie said. "We both know how to read and write. Jack's one of the best readers you'll ever meet."
"My, isn't that wonderful, class?" said Miss Neely.
"Yes, ma'am," said the younger children. The older boy gave Jack a scowl.
"Not exactly the best," Jack said modestly.
"I love to read," said Miss Neely. "I'll read any book I can get my hands on."
"Me too," said Jack.
"Then perhaps you'd like to start off our first reading lesson of the school year," said Miss Neely.
"Sure," said Jack.
"Sit with Jeb, then," said Miss Neely. "And Annie, you sit with Kate and her brother Will."
Will and Kate quickly made room for Annie on their bench. But Jeb didn't move over for Jack, not even an inch. Jack barely had room to sit. He took a deep breath and sat on the end of the bench. Miss Neely handed Jack a book.
"This is our only reader," she said. "It's called the McGuffey Reader. Please read the first two lines of the poem on page 50.
Sure, ma'am," said Jack.
He turned to page 50. He pushed his glasses into place. Then he read aloud.
"Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are."
"Very good," said Miss Neely. "Now pass the reader to Jeb."
Jack handed the book to Jeb.
"Jeb, please read the next two lines," said Miss Neely.
The older boy cleared his throat and stared at the page.
"Maybe Jeb can't read,"
Will said in a kind voice to Miss Neely. Jeb's face got red.
"Shut up, Will,"
he muttered.
"Oh," said Miss Neely.
She looked confused. Jack felt sorry for Jeb. He wanted to give him some help. Barely moving his lips, Jack whispered,
"Up above the world so high, like a diamond."
Jeb turned on Jack with an angry look.
"I don't need your help," he said.
"Now, Jeb, don't get mad," said Miss Neely. "And Jack, you shouldn't give people the answers."
"I'm sorry," said Jack.
Miss Neely sighed and pulled out her pocket watch. She was starting to look tired.
"Why don't you all go outside and have your noon meal?" she said. "I'll stay in and prepare for our next lesson."
Miss Neely opened the door of the sod hut. Annie, Kate, and Will bounced up from their seats and started cheerfully out of the schoolroom. Jack turned to Jeb.
"Hey, sorry for what happened," Jack said.
Jeb just glared at him and didn't say anything.
"Come on, Jack,"
Annie called outside the hut.
"Kate wants us to eat with them."
Jack hurried out the door. He didn't look back at Jeb. Chapter 5. Bully. The air outside was strangely still. The dark clouds still hovered in the distance.
"Storm's coming," said Will. "We have to eat quickly before it starts to rain," said Kate.
She and Will sat down on the grass. Annie and Jack sat beside them. Will opened a small burlap sack. He took out four lumpy objects. They looked like dark rocks.
"Hey, there's one here for each of us," said Kate.
"One what?"
asked Annie, frowning.
"Sweet potatoes," said Will.
He gave a potato each to Kate, Annie, and Jack.
No thanks," said Jack, trying to give his back. "We don't want to take your lunch."
"We have enough. Keep it," said Kate.
"What do you do with it?"
asked Annie, holding up her potato. Kate laughed.
"Just bite," she said. "Like this."
Kate and Will bit into their cold, sweet potatoes as if they were apples.
"Cool,"
said Annie. She took a big bite out of her potato, too. But Jack just held on to his. He didn't quite feel like eating the cold brown potato. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Jeb sitting by himself. The big kid didn't seem to have any lunch at all. Jack thought he'd try to be friends one more time.
"Hey, Jeb," he called out. "I'm not hungry. You want my sweet potato?"
Jeb gave Jack a mean look.
"I could have brought my own lunch if I wanted to eat," he said.
"Oh, sure," said Jack. Jeb narrowed his eyes.
"You making fun again?" he said. "I'm warning you. Do that one more time and I'll fight you."
Jack couldn't believe it. This kid took everything he said the wrong way.
"Hey," Annie said. "Leave my brother alone. You're nothing but a bully, Jeb."
"Annie, stay out of this," said Jack. But Jeb just laughed.
Then he stood up and walked back into the schoolhouse. Jack felt angry. He hoped they would find the special writing soon so they could leave. Will seemed to have read Jack's mind.
"Don't worry about him," Will said to Jack. "He's never been to school before."
"Oh, so he's embarrassed," said Annie.
"Why hasn't he been to school?" said Jack.
"Because he has to work in the fields all the time," said Will.
"I heard him tell Miss Neely he walked 5 miles to get here today," Kate said. "So he must have really wanted to come."
"Wow," said Annie. "How far did you and Will walk?"
"Only 2,
said Kate.
"2 what?" asked Annie.
"Miles,"
said Kate. 2 miles? Jack repeated. The Prairie Kids nodded.
"It must be lonely living out here," Annie said.
Will and Kate nodded again.
"Do you live in a sod house?" Jack asked.
"We used to," said Will, "but it was always dirty, so our pa built us a log cabin."
"He cut trees near the creek," said Kate. "Then he made the cabin by hand."
Before Annie or Jack could ask another question, thunder cracked in the sky. Then rain started to fall. It fell fast and hard. Everyone jumped up.
"Come in, come in," Miss Neely called from the doorway. They ran back inside. The wind slammed the door behind them with a bang. Chapter 6. Grasshopper Attack? Inside the lamp-lit hut, it was dry and cozy. Jack sat back on his bench. He didn't dare look at Jeb. "It's time for our writing lesson now," Miss Neely said. "I'm going to give you each a slate and a pen." She handed out the slates. They looked like small blackboards set in wooden frames. Next, she gave everyone a slate pen. Each pen was a thin piece of chalk. Miss Neely opened the McGuffey reader. "While you were eating your noon meal, I copied a poem from the book," she said. "Now I want you to copy it." Miss Neely held her own slate board up for them all to see. "'Tis a lesson you should heed. Try, try again. If at first you don't succeed, try, try again." Jack quickly started copying the words. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Jeb writing very slowly. It took the older boy a long time just to write the letter T. Jack slowed down, too. He didn't want Jeb to think he was showing off. Suddenly, loud thumping sounds came from overhead. It sounded as if someone were throwing stones against the roof.
"Oh, no! Grasshopper attack!" screamed Kate. She covered her head. "Grasshopper attack!" cried Will. He covered his head, too.
"Be calm, everyone," said Miss Neely.
"What's a grasshopper attack? What are they talking about?" Jack wondered. Even Jeb seemed worried. As Miss Neely started toward the door, he said, "Don't open it. They'll come in."
"Has everyone gone crazy?" Jack thought. "How can grasshoppers hurt anyone?"
Miss Neely opened the door and looked out. A moment later, she stuck her head back in and closed the door. "It's all right," she said. "It's only hailstones."
"What's that?" said Annie.
"Hailstones are small pieces of frozen rain. Sometimes they fall to earth during a thunderstorm," said Miss Neely.
"Why did Will and Kate yell grasshopper attack?" Jack asked.
"Because last spring, grasshoppers did attack us," said Miss Neely.
"Yes, millions and millions of them came out of the sky," said Will. "It looked like a huge, shiny cloud."
"They covered every inch of ground," said Kate. "They ate everything."
"They ate all our crops," said Will. "Our turnips and fruit trees and watermelons."
"They even ate our clothes and bed sheets," said Kate.
"Yuck," said Annie. "Oh, man," said Jack. He'd never heard of a grasshopper attack before.
"It was very scary," said Kate.
"But remember how we replanted and everyone helped everyone else," said Miss Neely. Kate and Will nodded. "We must try to hold on to the good memories," Miss Neely said gently, "and let go of the bad ones."
"Yes, ma'am," said Kate.
Everyone was quiet for a moment. Then the sound of the hailstones died away. "Let's go back to our lesson now," said Miss Neely. They all returned to their writing. Even working as slowly as he could, Jack finished first. He showed his copy of the poem to Miss Neely.
"Good work, Jack," she said. "We can all learn from these words, can't we?"
"Yes, ma'am," said Jack.
"Hey, this is it, Jack," Annie blurted out. "Something to learn."
Miss Neely looked puzzled, but Jack smiled. He knew what Annie was talking about. They had their special writing. They could go home.
Jack stood up. "Excuse me, ma'am, but I'm afraid we have to leave," he said.
"So soon?" said Miss Neely.
"Yes, we have to go back to our parents," said Annie.
"May I take my slate with us?" Jack asked.
"Please do," said Miss Neely.
"Use it on your trip to California to practice your writing."
"Thanks," said Jack with a big smile. He put the slate in his leather bag. "We learned a lot, ma'am."
"I'm glad you had a chance to come to school," said Miss Neely. "Goodbye and good luck."
"Good luck to you, too," said Annie.
"Bye," Will and Kate called out.
"Bye," said Jack and Annie.
As they went out the door, Jack glanced at Jeb. He felt sorry for the older boy. He tried one last time to be friends.
"Bye, Jeb," he said, but the boy wouldn't even look at him.
Jack gently closed the door to the schoolhouse. He breathed a sigh of relief. He was glad to get away from Jeb's anger.
"That's weird," said Annie. "Look at the sky."
As Jack turned away from the schoolhouse door, he caught his breath. The sky did look weird. Really weird. Chapter 7. Twister. The black clouds had taken on an odd greenish color. They all seemed to be going in different directions.
"Do you think it's a grasshopper attack?"
Annie asked nervously.
"No, I think it's some more weird weather, like that hailstorm," said Jack. "Let's go before it gets worse."
As they started back to the treehouse, the wind picked up. Jack and Annie looked over their shoulders. The greenish clouds had dipped down close to the prairie.
"I feel like something awful is about to happen," said Annie.
"Hurry," said Jack. "Run."
He and Annie started running through the grass. When they got to the ladder of the treehouse, they looked back. In the distance, twisting black clouds had dropped out of the storm clouds. They swirled into a funnel shape. The dark funnel started twisting across the prairie. Jack's heart nearly jumped out of his chest.
"It's a twister," he said.
"Oh, no," cried Annie.
The twister was whirling and tearing across the grass.
"Let's get out of here," said Jack. He grabbed the rope ladder and started up.
"Wait," said Annie. "We have to help Miss Neely and the other kids."
"They have a storm cellar," Jack said. "That's what our book said."
"Yeah, but it's only their first day in the dugout. They might not know about it," said Annie. "There was a rug on the floor."
Annie is right, Jack thought. He looked up at the treehouse. All they had to do was climb up and leave, and they'd be safe. But what about Miss Neely? What about Will and Kate and Jeb?
"Okay," said Jack. He jumped down from the ladder. "Let's go back."
He and Annie started running back toward the schoolhouse. They ran as fast as they could across the prairie. The roaring sound of the twister followed them. Suddenly, the wind threw them to the ground. Jack clutched the tall grass, trying to stand. When he got up, he grabbed Annie's hand. He pulled her up, too. With all his might, Jack held on to Annie and pulled her along. The roaring twister came closer and closer. The wind ripped up grass and earth around them. The roar grew deafening. Jack and Annie could barely stay on their feet. Finally, they reached the dugout. They tried to open the door, but it wouldn't budge. They banged on the door with their fists.
"Let us in," Annie shouted.
No one opened the door.
"They can't hear us," yelled Jack.
But the sound of the twister drowned out his voice. Chapter 8. Get Below. Suddenly the schoolhouse door blew off its hinges. It went flying through the air. Jack grabbed Annie and pulled her into the dugout. Inside, the benches were overturned. The room was a mess. Miss Neely and the three kids were pressed against the dirt wall. Kate and Will screamed as the winds whipped around the room. Miss Neely hugged Kate. Jeb held on to Will.
"Get in the cellar," Jack yelled.
"What cellar?"
shouted Miss Neely. Together, Jack and Annie pulled the rug off the floor and uncovered the cellar door. They grabbed the door and tried to open it, but the wind was blowing too hard. Suddenly, Jeb was beside them. He pulled the door open. A ladder led down into the cellar. One by one, Will, Kate, Miss Neely, and Annie went down the ladder. Jack waited for Jeb to go down.
"Go, go!" Jeb shouted.
Jack climbed down into the cellar. Jeb came last. He closed the door behind him, leaving everyone in total darkness. The twister roared fiercely above them. It sounded like a train barreling right through the schoolhouse. As the twister roared and howled, Jack couldn't think. He couldn't feel. He was totally swept up in the howl of the wind. Then, just as Jack felt he would disappear in the roar of the twister, the noise died down, and then it was silent. No one spoke for a moment in the blackness. Then Annie broke the silence.
"Are we still alive?"
she whispered. Everyone laughed. "Yes, I think we are," said Miss Neely. Chapter 9. All Clear. Jeb pushed open the cellar door. Daylight streamed in. He looked out.
"All clear," he said.
Jeb crawled out of the cellar. Jack followed him, then Annie, Will, Kate, and Miss Neely. The sky was gray above them. The twister had torn the roof off the dugout and sucked everything out, even the rug. They all stared in shock at the empty space. Then Miss Neely smiled. "Well, at least we are all safe," she said. They stepped out of the hut. The air was thick with dust and bits of grass. The twister had cut a wide path of dirt and destruction across the prairie. It was still whirling away on the horizon. Everyone watched silently as the twister became long and thin like a piece of rope. Then it vanished completely. Miss Neely turned to Jack and Annie. "You saved our lives," she said.
"Thank you," said Will.
"Thank you," said Kate, hugging Annie.
"Jeb actually opened the cellar door," said Jack.
"Yes, thank you too, Jeb," said Miss Neely. The older boy only scowled.
"I hope you can get a new school," said Annie.
"We will," said Miss Neely. "Just as we planted our fields again after the grasshopper attack, we'll build our school again after the twister. If at first you don't succeed, try again." Jack thought Miss Neely was one of the bravest people he'd ever met.
"You're a good teacher," he said shyly.
"I love teaching," she said. "It's a job that lasts forever. Whatever you teach children today travels with them far into the future."
"That's true," said Annie.
Jack smiled.
"Well, we better leave again," he said.
"Bye." Everyone waved, except Jeb. Jack and Annie started across the prairie back toward the treehouse. They hadn't gone far when Jack heard someone shout his name. He turned around. It was Jeb.
"Wait,"
the older boy yelled. He had a fierce look on his face. He started running toward them.
"Oh, no," Jack breathed. Did Jeb still want to fight?
"Leave us alone," Annie said angrily.
"Shush, Annie," said Jack. "Let's see what he wants."
When Jeb got close to them, he stopped. He looked right at Jack.
"Why did you come back?" he asked.
"We wanted to tell you about the storm cellar," said Jack.
"How did you know about that cellar?"
Jeb said. Jack pulled their research book out of his leather bag.
"We read about it in this book," he said.
Jeb stared at the book. Then he sighed.
"I aim to read someday, too," he said. "That looks like a good book."
Jack didn't know what to say. He was still afraid of making Jeb mad, so he just nodded.
"My ma and pa were too poor to go to school," said Jeb. "They want me to go, but I'm getting started mighty late."
"It's not too late," said Jack.
"It's never too late," said Annie.
Jeb narrowed his eyes.
"If you ever come back through here," he said.
"Yes?" Jack asked carefully. Was Jeb about to threaten him again?
"Maybe I'll be able to read that book of yours," Jeb said.
Jack sighed and smiled.
"I know you will," he said.
Jeb smiled back. He had a nice smile.
"Thanks for coming back to rescue us," he said to both Jack and Annie. "Too bad you can't stay. I reckon we'd all be good friends if you did."
"I reckon we would," said Annie.
Jeb nodded. Then he turned and ran back to join the others. Suddenly the sun broke through the clouds. The wildflowers danced in a gentle breeze.
"Ready?"
said Annie. Jack just stood there staring at the sunlit prairie.
"Jack, ready to go?"
Annie asked. In that moment, Jack actually hated to leave, but he nodded slowly and said, "Let's go." He and Annie took off through the bright, sparkling grass. They ran to the small grove of trees near the creek. They climbed up the rope ladder and scrambled into the treehouse. Annie picked up their Pennsylvania book.
"I wish we could go there," she said.
This time, the wind did not start to blow. The treehouse simply started to spin on its own. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 10, The Third Writing. Jack opened his eyes. Morning light filled the treehouse. He and Annie were wearing their own clothes again.
"Home," said Annie, smiling.
Jack looked out the window. He saw their nice cozy house in the distance, their lawn, their sidewalk, their paved street.
"Life here is pretty easy compared to pioneer life," said Jack.
"We're lucky," said Annie.
Jack reached into his bag and pulled out the small slate. "Our third writing," he said. He added the poem to the list from the Civil War and the letter from the Revolutionary War.
"You did just what that poem says you should do," said Annie.
"What do you mean?"
Jack asked.
"If at first you don't succeed, try again," Annie said. "You kept trying to make friends with Jeb. In the end, you did."
"I guess you're right," said Jack.
"We have to get only one more special writing for Morgan's library," said Annie.
"I wonder how that will help save Camelot," said Jack.
Annie shrugged.
"It's a mystery," she said.
She and Jack looked around the treehouse.
"Look."
Annie picked up a piece of paper lying in the corner. She read aloud.
"Come back early Wednesday morning."
"Wednesday? Man, that's tomorrow," said Jack.
"So?"
said Annie. She started down the rope ladder.
"Not much time to recover," said Jack, pulling on his backpack.
"Recover from what?" Annie said.
"The twister," said Jack.
"Oh, yeah. I'd almost forgotten about that," said Annie.
Jack smiled. Actually, the nightmare of the twister was fading from his memory, too.
"We must try to hold on to the good memories," Miss Neely had said, "and let go of the bad ones. The kindness of Will and Kate, making friends with Jeb, the courage of Miss Neely, these memories Jack thought he would never forget."